But the process of development did not stop there. There is, in the Vedas, a rather shadowy goddess called Vak, a very ancient goddess. There are several hymns to her in the Rig Veda. Vak means speech. Not so much ordinary speech. It means speech in the sense of powerful, significant speech, even we may say creative speech. It's rather interesting, by the way, that the ancient Indians should have deified speech, should have made a deity, a goddess, Vak, out of speech, and address hymns to her, hymns to communication, we may say. It shows that the ancient Indians realized the great importance of human communication. Now, what happened was, in the course of centuries, Saraswati gradually assumed the attributes of Vak, and the two goddesses became identified. Or if you like, Vak became, the goddess Vak became, absorbed in the goddess Saraswati. Now, the word which Vak represented was the spoken word. As yet, there was no such thing as writing in India, at least not for religious purposes. Writing was something profane. Writing was something used for keeping accounts. So similarly, the culture with which Saraswati was associated, of which she had become the personification, the symbol, was an orally transmitted culture. Everything was handed down from the teacher to the pupil personally by word of mouth. So in such a culture, memory is of tremendous importance. If somebody's memory fails, then valuable knowledge, knowledge that is of permanent value to the community, may be lost. So Saraswati became associated also with good memory. There's a similar situation in ancient Greece. In ancient Greek mythology, one has the nine muses. The nine muses are the personifications of various arts and sciences. They're the companions, in some accounts, the daughters of the god Apollo, the god of poetry, of music, and prophecy. And who is the mother of the muses? The mother of the muses is Mnemosyne, whose name means memory. Memory is the mother of the muses. Memory is the mother of the arts and the sciences. In other words, in all three literate societies, there's no culture without memory. Later, in India, of course, a change did take place. Oral traditions were all written down, or nearly all written down. And Saraswati became not just a goddess of culture, she became a goddess of literature. Goddess not only of the spoken, but of the written word. Goddess even, patroness even, of scholarship, of learning. She also became associated with the god Brahma, became regarded, in fact, as married to the god Brahma. Brahma is one of the Trimurti, or three principal embodiments of the divine in Puranic Hinduism. There's Brahma the creator, Vishnu the preserver, and Shiva the destroyer. So this is the Saraswati, who is still worshipped in India today, more than 1,000 years after all these developments took place. She is the goddess of learning, of education and culture. She is the embodiment of the principle of speech or communication. She is the personification of memory, the patroness of literature, both sacred and profane. And she's married to the god Brahma, the creator. So this is the goddess who appears at the beginning of chapter 6 of the sutra and promises to protect the sutra. Incidentally, it's the first time that she appears in Indian literature at all. That is to say, appears in her capacity as culture goddess. At least, that is what I was told many years ago by a very great scholar indeed, the late Dr. Surendranath Dasgupta, the author of the standard 7-volume A History of Indian Philosophy, published by the University of Cambridge. Probably he was the greatest authority on the subject of Indian philosophy in modern times. He was a Hindu, in fact, a believing Hindu, a practicing Hindu, but unlike some Hindu scholars, he believed that the development of Hinduism had been deeply influenced by Buddhism. Now remember that we were talking about this one day, talking about this influence of Buddhism on Hinduism, not the other way around. We were talking, I remember, in Lucknow as long ago as 1950. And somehow the name of the goddess Sarasvati came up. And he said, "Do you know, the earliest reference to this goddess occurs in a Buddhist sutra." In other words, in the Sutra of Golden Light. Well, I didn't know. At that time, I hadn't read the Sutra of Golden Light. I think, in fact, I hadn't even heard of the Sutra of Golden Light.